Welcome to the Cannabis Connection. Thank you, SantaCruzVoice.com. Big up, Santa Cruz. Happy Friday. Hope you had a beautiful week. My guest is Sibo Shen. As our guest and joining us, he combines the worlds of technology and wellness as an inventor, product designer, and transformation coach. With an impressive track record, he has contributed to the successful exits of six tech companies and led three cannabis brands to win multiple Cannabis Cup awards. Currently, he's the Chief Innovation Officer at Form Vape Technologies and the head coach at I Am Self Mastery Academy. Beyond his professional life, he is a passionate about gardening, meditation, and spending quality time with his family. We're really honored to have him today. It's his daughter's birthday, so thanks for joining us, brother.
Yeah, Chris, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, no, it's an honor, and we share some mutual friends. And how did this plant come into your life, and how did you develop your relationship with cannabis?
Well, I will give the short version of the story. Is I always believed that I was going to be a professional athlete. So I came into having a relationship with the plant, like I would say fairly late, at least for North Americans. And I started consuming cannabis after my second year of college. As I said, I was, even though I still weigh about 130 pounds, but I was 130 pounds back then, I really wanted to get into the NFL. And by the time I finished my second year of college, I realized I really wasn't going to grow that much more. And I probably wasn't going to be in the NFL. So maybe I should enjoy myself. And one of my college roommates, you know, he consumed cannabis like literally every day. And I finally told him I was ready to give it a try. And when I tried it, it just really opened up my mind. I was always into the exploration of consciousness and the way cannabis altered the way I experienced reality. It was very eye-opening on many levels, you know, just being less judgmental, just being more sensitive to the different flavors of food or the music that I was listening to. And I instantly fell in love with the plant and just really wanted to figure out if there was other ways to interact with the plant or deliver the cannabinoids that didn't require combustion.
Wow. Well said. Yeah. And a lot of your work is interwoven, this beautiful tapestry of wellness and spirituality and family and innovation, technology. There's a lot of themes that I'd love to explore. Can we speak a little bit to going a little deeper and putting a pin in learning about non-combustion approaches to delivering and feeding the endogenous, the human cannabinoid system with what the plant can provide, specifically vaporization. And for those that may not know, just what is it and how does it work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the process of combustion is anytime you light something and it has a chemical change due to the I'm almost laughing due to the combustion of the said material. Whereas vaporization, the process is taking the molecule, whatever it may be, THC, CBD, dimethyltryptamine, and heating it to a certain temperature, wherever its boiling point is, and it shifts from being a solid into a gas. And when you consume cannabinoids that way, there is significantly less tar and carcinogens. And of course, I would, if someone were to ask me what's the healthiest way to ingest cannabinoids, I would say that eating it would be the best way. But if you are someone who needs a faster form of titration, then vaporization is one of the best ways to immediately feel the effects and benefit from cannabis without having to go through that combustion process.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's a very, the ancient way is mostly the there's a lot of eating in like the different majun in India, and of course charas, and of course the sadhus, and the smoking of resin. But I think, yeah, you're spot on with most health conscious way, but there is something to be said. You mentioned titration, and that's key. And so when you do vaporize, it has that quicker onset, and it isn't so long lasting, because when we do eat it, it is goes through the whole process of digestion, which can make a very prolonged experience, but definitely medicinal. It was interesting. You mentioned dimethyltryptamine, and can we speak a little bit to these other medicines and teachers and your relationship or experience with, especially as an athlete, and you're it's impressive. You're still at your college fitness. No, I imagine things change over time, but just that relationship to like mind and body and spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I personally believe that when I was younger, I grew up in the 80s, you know, they always talked about cannabis being a gateway drug into more horrible and dangerous drugs. But I have found that with intentional use, you know, it is a gateway into exploring your consciousness in ways that might not be accessible to your normal state of consciousness. And whether it is Delta 9, psilocybin, dimethyltryptamine, I believe that all of these molecules allow us to explore ourselves in a way that we normally do not have that type of perception. And in many ways, you know, I became a meditation coach a few years ago because I was fortunate enough to access these higher planes of consciousness without plant medicines. And through that experience, it actually took me from being an atheist into someone that had a connection with the universe or God. And wow. So when I think about, yeah, cannabis actually, you know, when they called it a gateway drug, it was a gateway to so many more things than just harder drugs that wouldn't be beneficial for your future or your life.
Well, that's beautiful. Yeah, I concur. I've had a similar relationship with the plant, and I still today know enough to know that it's a journey, it's a process. I know enough to know that I still have so much more to discover, and it's humbling sometimes in those moments of self-exploration to develop that connection to a deeper source, to this you said the universe or God, and I concur. The cannabis was a wonderful gateway in my experience too to these other realms of thought, and then of course how thoughts can kind of influence and catalyze our behaviors. I think that's something that's really fascinating too, is to speak to that work that you do with as a coach, and maybe best practices, or for those that don't know what that is, what are some key elements to maybe nurturing or catalyzing that deeper exploration of self without the assistance of the chemistry coming from other plant medicines, or you mentioned psilocybin, which is another, we've had some guests on the show that have spoken to that relationship with the sacred mushroom, and it's very interesting, but I think it's also very wonderful to look at the full spectrum and how our bodies can actually, we can go to different states of consciousness naturally.
Yeah. Oh man, this is such an interesting question, and there is so much to say. So I'll do my best to keep it succinct. In my exploration of personal development, as well as when I burned out from cannabis 3 years ago, I needed to find different ways to heal. I had been living in a world where a lot of my self-worth came from my achievements and accomplishments. And it's no different than a lot of people, which is I felt like, you know, the more I achieved, the more I accomplished, the better I would feel about myself, and the more, you know, the world would respect me. And I was saying the world in air quotes. And I started realizing that when I functioned in this type of framework, it did allow me to achieve and accomplish a lot. But in between the achievements and accomplishments was a lot of mental suffering and physical suffering as well, just sacrificing my time, my health, my relationships in order for these achievements. And the field of personal development that I really fell in love with was the one that really talks about there's two approaches to the world, which is there's the outside in approach, which is Everything from the outside affects the way you feel inside. You know, if your boss is nice to you, you feel great. If your boss is mad at you, you feel bad. If your significant other is happy with you and cooking you dinner, you feel happy. If they're unhappy with you, then, you know, you're sleeping on the sofa in the evening and not too happy. And then the other approach is the inside out approach, which is regardless of what is going on in the outside world, you have the choice. You have the sovereignty to choose. You know, do I want to perceive this challenge as a negative problem or as a positive event that will catalyze expansion of consciousness? And the inside out approach really spoke to me because, as you mentioned, as you were reading my bio, which was cringy for me to hear knowing that I wrote that just a few nights ago, was that like, wow, you know, I've accomplished a lot of things, but none of those things actually made me happy until I chose to be happy. And I will be the first to admit that a lot of the new language that I use today, you know, the version of Sabo that existed 4 years ago would just almost feel very cringy about these metaphysical woo-woo words. But one of the things that I also explored was quantum physics. And in quantum physics, especially in the latest models of quantum physics, literally, you know, your thoughts can create reality. Everything exists in superposition, wave form. And when you focus your attention on it, it collapses the wave into a single moment in space time. And what I believe is when people take psychedelics, it actually allows you to see more of the superposition, meaning like when you wave your hands in front of your face and you see these trails, you know, like you might just think, oh, okay, you're seeing trails because, you know, I just took psilocybin. But I believe that you see the trails because you actually see like where your hand could be in all of these different possibilities. And when you get off of like the psilocybin or ayahuasca, is that your consciousness then focuses onto a different frequency where you can only see an object in a single point in space and time. So I know this was a very long, convoluted answer, but
it was very clear to me. It resonated incredibly well. I'm really happy you brought up Sabo. It's an honor to connect. We have mutual friends, and it's really fired me up. The quantum physics piece to it too. That what I love about learning about quantum physics is there's a lot that is unknown too. It's very hypothetical, which consciousness as a realm of study and as a science, but also as like just the deepening and the spiritual component. Because what is consciousness? These are open rhetorical questions, but philosophical pursuits, almost ways of life. There's whole religions devoted to this. And so it's fascinating what you said about the quantum physics and possibilities. One thing that I wanted to ask is, so when we process... You mentioned ayahuasca too, which is a powerful teacher, and a lot of it's beautiful that it's been similar to cannabis. It's been around for thousands of years. The indigenous peoples of the Amazon have these deep spiritual shamanistic connections and songs and curanderos that you know, devote their life to the healing, right, of people, but also of the Mother Ayahuasca and the consciousness and the connection we have to also the planet. That's another interesting thing to explore. But when you said that when we process these powerful substances, these catalysts, I want to hear your thoughts on how to change thoughts, or how you know, you said it really succinctly, how thoughts can potentially become what we experience, and meditation is a big topic, but I know you have some experience there. And how does one quiet the mind in such a way that we can start to positively influence this reality, but also maybe explore the other potentials, like you said, with the trails? It's almost like we're seeing the superposition. That's fascinating, and love to think about the exercise and the lifestyle of getting more intentional and mindful with these really big concepts.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I would say that, first of all, if this is a topic that is interesting to the people listening, is to check out Professor Donald Hoffman out of UC Irvine. He has a theory called conscious realism that space-time is actually not fundamental to the universe, is that consciousness is fundamental to the universe. And if you grant him that consciousness is fundamental instead of space-time, he has all of these mathematical equations that will explain how we got here from the Big Bang. And that really kind of opened up my ideas to what else is out there. And he references quantum physics quite a bit. But in the latest models of quantum physics, previously they talked about, you know, there is the waveform, and then when you collapse the waveform, it turns into a particle. But now in the latest models of quantum physics, everything is a wave. And the best way that they described a wave is that a wave is a vibration. So everything is a vibration. And things that are more solid are a denser, slower vibration. Things that are more kind of like light and translucent would be like a higher frequency, less dense vibration, like a light particle. And so as I started delving into this and started learning that everything that we see in physical reality is a vibration, and then a movie called Everything Everywhere All at Once came out, and I was very curious about this.
Yeah.
Concept, Everything Everywhere All at Once. And as I read into it, and this all is also depending on, you know, which quantum physics or physicist you're following, you know, some may agree or disagree, but the most agreed upon definition I got was that the future and the past are all illusions. Everything that has ever happened, everything that will ever happen, is all happening simultaneously across infinite parallel realities. And so the concept of everything happening simultaneously across all infinite parallel realities could seem like a very dense concept to try to absorb. But I think the best way that, or the best analogy I can explain, is every single radio station in your area that you have access to all coexist on top of each other at the very same time. But depending on what frequency you're tuned into, you may hear rock music, rap music, alternative music.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. So if you think about that, that every single reality exists, but where your brain is tuned into, that is the reality that you experience. So, you know, one only has to go as far as looking at our own country. Like, there's literally like two realities that are coexisting in parallel with each other. And depending on which ideology you subscribe to, then you'll find information that is pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine or pro-mask or anti-mask. And literally, like, you know, whichever ideology that you subscribe to, you have so much data that supports that. And so this, to me, is an example of like how easily your thoughts, you know, create the reality that you live in. And I used to think of it as, oh, okay, like, you just have cognitive bias and you tend to find this. But more and more, especially as I get deeper into my spiritual practice, is that I believe it to be literal, is that there is a world where the vaccine works. There is a world where the vaccine is just a way that the government is trying to implant chips into you and monitor you. But these two worlds could actually coexist at the same time. And depending on which frequency you're dialed into, that is the reality that you will experience. And in my deep meditations outside of utilizing entheogens, you know, that was one of the messages that I would see over and over and over again, is be mindful of your thoughts. Your thoughts create the reality that you live in. And whether or not you believe in the metaphysical explanation that I give, I do believe that, you know, on a more practical, tactical level, you know, being mindful of your thoughts, i.e. like, hey, I believe that I'm going to have the best, you know, birthday dinner with my daughter today. Like, even if there was no metaphysical woo-woo, you know, energy associated with that, I do believe on a practical, tactical level, that's still the right attitude if you truly want to live a life of purpose, joy, and fulfillment.
Well said. Yeah, I learned early in my time in Santa Cruz, I'm known as Smiley Green and from Santa Cruz, and would tour with my band, and a lot of people would be like, where are you guys from? Where are you guys? And just, you know, intuitively didn't really have a lot of intention or thought behind it, but just came full force wherever we could be playing a cowboy bar in Montana, but would come with that big old smile and we play, you know, rebel roots music, reggae, ska. And if it comes from the heart, it goes to the heart. And I think the way you wrapped up these intense in mind expanding concepts, but just in general, just having the best attitude and going into, for example, a birthday dinner with the, and knowing that it's going to be a great night, a memorable time with your family, some beautiful memories will be made. It's really I think no matter what, this is sound. And the more we learn about quantum physics and the more we hypothesize around the nature of things in our universe, for example, dark matter, if we're looking out into the cosmos, or here in Santa Cruz, the Monterey Bay, we don't know much about this huge, with this massive canyon right outside. You go, you know, out of the Santa Cruz Harbor and it goes poof, it just drops deeper than the Grand Canyon. We know more about the cosmos and the heavens and the heavenly bodies in the universe than we know about the waters right outside this talk studio. It's fascinating to be humbled and to go into the growth and the pursuit of knowledge and understanding with that humility of there's so much that we don't know. One thing that I wanted to ask about in your research and in your journey is one thing that I've had some powerful experiences. Sometimes though, the most profound things that I've experienced are seconds after a deep sleep. And your thoughts around dreams, we spoke a little bit to parallel realities, and I like the analogy of all these radio stations broadcasting simultaneously, and once in a while we're just dialed into our default station, which is probably this waking consciousness. But sometimes when dreaming, I feel like I've experienced or heard another radio station and maybe another version of myself. It could have been just, I could have written it off as a dream, but there is a place I've visited multiple times in dreams and wanted to hear your thoughts about some of these concepts and when it comes, does dreams come into your research or into your meditations and thoughts around that?
Oh man, you are totally asking me all the questions that I am so interested in. And so, as I was saying earlier, you know, we were talking about different brainwave patterns that occur in the mind, and our brain shows different frequencies, like when we are meditating, when we've taken plant medicines. And what's actually interesting is in the fMRIs of people that are master meditators, you know, like the yogis that you see in the videos, when they're in their deep meditation, it very much mimics the brain activity that you see in someone that has taken psilocybin, ayahuasca, those types of psychedelics. And so the dream world, you know, when we're sleeping, we go into delta brainwaves. The meditation state is theta brainwaves. And in some of my earlier meditations, when I started getting really deep in the meditations, it did feel very dreamlike. And so many times, you know, if for the listeners that have done plant medicines, you know, like a lot of these experiences that you have could be similar to dreams, where, you know, you have a lot of experience, you have a lot of feeling, you might not be able to remember all the details that well. The physics be slightly off in the dream world. And so I'm going to say something that may sound kind of out there, but since we're already speaking about this, I'm going to say it anyways, which is, I was very curious about dreams my whole life. Is like, what is going on? Where is my consciousness going? Is this just imagination? And so in one of the deep meditations, that is what I was contemplating. And what I've learned is, when I get into deep meditation and I ask a question, and then I go into what I like to call receiving mode, which is, you know, don't try to look and achieve the answer. Just try to receive the answer. When I could totally surrender, I usually get the answer. And the answer that I got about dreams was that the dreams are what we would call fourth density. And so if I guess you're from Santa Cruz, so I'm sure you've heard this verbiage before, like the earth is going from 3D to 4D to 5D. Yeah. I always thought talking about third dimension to fourth dimension to fifth dimension, but in the vision that I got, it was no, from third density to fourth density to fifth density. And densities are just frequencies. So the higher the density from third to fourth to fifth, the more ability to experience and to give consciousness. And so when we're awake, we're in the third density. When we go to sleep, we go into the fourth density. In the fourth density, things are quasi-physical, so half physical, half energetic. And that's why sometimes when you're running or jumping or driving, the physics seems off. But what it was explained to me is that when you are having a dream, you are often being guided towards exploring something that may have been in your shadow, something that you've been avoiding. And the dream world typically doesn't show you like directly like, hey, you should be paying attention at work. It may show you in an analogy, like you should be paying attention to this thing. And if you don't pay attention, you could have a disastrous result. So my opinion on dreams based on my meditations is that they are a way for us to tap into our higher self, our subconscious, and to explore the themes that we may be avoiding in life. And if we explore those themes, then that will give us the most amount of consciousness expansion. And then the next dream will lead us to the next thing that we should be exploring. So I look at dreams as kind of like our own internal GPS system. And if you are good at deciphering your dreams, then you'll be able to navigate your life less based on just like, hey, let's use my strategic mind. Where do I want to be 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now? And trust that your dreams and trust that your intuition is your internal navigation system that could guide you on what you should be doing with your life.
Wow, that's powerful. Yeah, I've had some dreams that were almost upsetting. And maybe at the time I wasn't as healthy for patterns of other substance use maybe. And I've actually come full circle. I'm doing much better and much healthier. 24 has actually been a beautiful start. I was privileged to go to Maui. I have cousins in Maui, and they're having children. There was a new baby boy born. My daughter's about to be two, and we took this journey to Maui. And what I noticed too is my dreams changed based on, it could have been like the new place, the Pacific, something about where I was and getting away from Santa Cruz and going to this really special place, a place personally that is, it's been a place for healing for me. And I know actually for my cousin Andrew, he's from Wisconsin, and he had some bad things happen to him and moved to Maui, and his whole life is just so much, it's just done wonders for my family. And so since that trip, we did that for Thanksgiving this year, in the end of 23, and I'm so grateful for where I'm at now. But I remember in dreams, and I want to go deeper, I'm sharing this to ask you the question about shadow, that part of us that we avoid. And sometimes there's an analogy. I saw something in a dream, and I was scared, honestly. It scared me. It was definitely like an analogy. And I think it was indicative from what you just shared of my internal GPS saying, hey, be careful. Like this isn't good. This isn't healthy. And, that's powerful too. 'Cause I feel sometimes I get little internal GPS notifications that glimpses happen later. Like I'll dream something in say January 23, and then I'm in a moment or playing a show with my band in November 23, and that's something like the deja vu, what people call colloquially known as deja vu, which I still don't quite understand, but it's been consistent throughout my whole life that I've had these little glimpses, and then something happens, and it's like, that was an internal GPS notification. And and it's powerful because it has, I don't know how how deliberate I was, but I am grateful that I did follow the notification and did the shadow work, and I'm much healthier and happier. And it's just the very beginning of 2024, but from Thanksgiving to now, it's like amazing that I'm just grateful. It's like a lift. Something's off my chest. It's nice to talk about it aloud too. And can we speak a little bit to that though? I don't want to like go over the shadow, and especially in dreams, I feel like that's a place, because in our waking in the three density, of course, you can suppress things, and a lot of people do that as a coping mechanism, and it's kind of needed to function sometimes in the Western society. But I think there's value in the shadow work. Definitely with psychedelics, a lot of people avoid psychedelics because they're afraid of what might surface. And any strategies or testimony or anything that you can shed light on for those that are maybe, this is resonating, but it's still daunting. What can we speak and share about the shadow?
Yeah. And, you know, for those that are listening, you know, I think maybe the easiest definition I could give to your shadow, it's the parts of you that you repress and suppress the most. I know for me, you know, one of my biggest shadows that I repressed the most when I was running my companies was just how anxious and insecure I was. So I suppressed it and just gave a very optimistic, confident, you know, expression of myself. And the shadow was that if people saw me as vulnerable and weak, then investors wouldn't invest in me. My employees would lose faith in me. And I needed to shine light on that shadow because it was such a heavy load that I was shouldering all the time. And by its nature, you know, it's called the shadow because, you know, if you ever try to turn around and look at your shadow, it's quite evasive and it's hard to catch your own shadow. But one little trick that I learned was that anytime you get triggered by someone, you know, someone being rude at the grocery, someone cutting you off, whatever it may be, is that if you get triggered by someone, most likely that incident, that experience is related to one of your shadows. And, you know, for myself, a lot of what I share right now, I always say like what I'm sharing is coming from like my own personal experience or from my own meditation. So, you know, this isn't like a universal law or rule that will work for everyone or is the case for everyone. But if it resonates with you, please use it, which is the things that are your shadows or the things that are the most consistent challenges that you encounter in your life. You know, these were the lessons and the themes that your spirit, your consciousness wanted to explore in this physical incarnation. So if you always get, let's say, you know, your significant other always breaks up with you because you never draw boundaries, and this happens over and over and over again, one way to look at it is like, wow, I'm really unlucky. I choose the wrong boyfriend or girlfriend all the time. Or you could see, wow, you know, like all these things happened because I never drew boundaries. And so a lot of times the things in your shadow are actually the themes that you chose to explore. And I really love the concept that, you know, life doesn't happen to you. Life happens for you. So any of these, you know, quote unquote, negative experiences that you have, like this is not to say like everything is neutral or everything is positive. But if you can take a negative experience, see what you can learn from it, then you could take a negative experience, shine the light on it, and turn it into something positive. So I used to be very, very scared of shadow work because there was a lot of things that I didn't want to face within myself, especially when I was a CEO. And you're right, you know, taking psychedelics, you almost have no choice but to look at your shadows. And if you try to resist your shadow, it's going to become a bad trip, or what people would call a bad trip. But if you accept and surrender to your shadow and see that your shadow is there for you to learn something, then you have the most enlightening, epiphany-centric type of plant medicine journey. And, you know, that doesn't have to end with the plant medicines. You know, you could do shadow work without plant medicines as well.
That's powerful. Yeah, it's especially your experience with investors and being in the cannabis space, but in all these other endeavors, you have a beautiful pattern of of really taking things and making them flourish. One thing that's fascinating too is the balance. I work with the startup here in Santa Cruz. It's a wonderful group. I'm so grateful to be a part of it. I always, in the early days of transitioning from Prop 215 to Prop 64, I had ambitions to go out on my own and start a farm, and we did that. We actually started a local dispensary here called Kind People's Collective. I helped those owners kind of scale the business. I was always watching these kind of entrepreneurs in the green rush build, and it was a green rush for a reason, because there was a lot of attention and a lot of funding and a lot of excitement around cannabis. One thing that I was curious with you and your experience is the balance, and it could correlate to the shadow work too, the balance of taking, like, and you alluded to it, to be that leadership role, to be point with investors, to have that vision, but also to lead a team. And you know, I'm grateful to be a part of a team. I had ambitions to be a CEO and to take on that role. And in retrospect, I'm really grateful, like, how life kind of worked out. I was able to work with Val Corral and Wham. I was able to fulfill a dream of growing, you know, a massive garden of flowers in Santa Cruz County, an acre canopy, all from seed, and trying to help patients and that vision of Wham and serve the community first. And now to be a part of another kind of adjacent yet still serving the cannabis community startup, but I empathize for the leadership, for the CEO, and the pressure that comes with that. And maybe you can speak to, like, the work-life balance of being someone that has that role and taking on that leadership position for your whole team, for all the employees, but also with that forward facing for the investors, and then for this industry that's still in its infancy, yet we're light years away from that green rush moment that we all were a part of. Just thoughts.
Yeah, that is, that's a very provocative question to ask. And, you know, having gone through so many transformations over the last few years, you know, I was really running through the Rolodex of answers of how I should answer this. And so I think the best answer that I could give is, I believe being a CEO or just anyone involved in startups, it is one of the best opportunities to really learn about yourself, what your boundaries are, how to draw expectations with other people, and, you know, figure out what really makes you happy. And for me, you know, I was very mission driven when I first started my company. Then as the green rush started occurring and I saw large MSOs and the way they were running their business, you know, instead of sticking to the way I wanted to do things, I just looked at them and really tried to emulate them. And so you were asking, like, how do you juggle this? And I believe that, you know, one of the biggest lessons that CEOs and entrepreneurs can learn from this is really trusting their own intuition and their own judgment on what is best for their company. And you could spend all the time, you know, looking at all the data, looking at all the information, and, you know, it is very easy to just get overloaded with so much data. And I would say that's probably what stressed me out the most, was just trying to keep up with the market, understand, like, every single state, try to figure out, like, plans on how we were going to compete with all of our competitors. And instead of worrying about ourselves, I was worried about what everyone else was doing. And I think when you're worried about what everyone else is doing, it's really hard to get quality rest at nighttime. And one factoid that I came across that really made me want to connect more with my intuition was that your conscious mind could process 40 bits of data per second, but your subconscious can process data at 20 million bits of data per second. But your subconscious doesn't speak to you in the same way that your conscious mind does. Your conscious mind will be like, hey, Sabo, maybe you should start working on a portable vape versus making $600 desktop vapes. You know, like that's how my conscious mind works. But then my subconscious will just give me a feeling like, ah, you don't really want to, you know, work on this type of product. That really doesn't, you know, resonate with you. That's just something your investors want you to do. And many times I would use my conscious brain to shut down what my subconscious is telling me, not understanding that my subconscious actually processed all this information much more thoroughly than my conscious brain could ever process. And to be able to learn to trust that feeling that I get, because the feeling that I get is actually a heuristic for all of that logical, rational thinking. You know, that is what allowed me to decide to come back to the cannabis industry and approach it in a different way. Because instead of trying to worry about what everyone else is doing, it's let's focus on what we do best. And if we do what we know that what we can do, then we have the best chance at competing in this type of market. And this kind of leads to a slightly tangential, but I think still a relevant topic, which is I noticed that when I try to understand consciousness through my mind, you can only get to certain levels of consciousness of trying to understand it with your mind. You know, like, how does this work? How did it evolve? Okay, this worked, that worked. Okay, this is how everything coalesces and comes together. And if you truly want to reach and attain higher levels of consciousness, you have to experience life through your heart and not through your mind. And so, again, sorry for a very long answer to a simple question, but, you know, a lot of these things are quite nuanced. And I believe depending on which stage you're at in your life, you know, certain answers may resonate with you more than others.
I know. I love everything you share every time. It's they're big, broad questions, too, because it's an honor to connect with you, Sabo. And I think you have a very open openness in articulating these kind of complex concepts, but intuition, that really is a great answer. And the putting like the scale, you mentioned some numerical, like conscious mind can compute to this, you know, to X, but then the subconscious is 20 million X, which is so powerful because it speaks to the following. And I was taught before I got into cannabis, before I met my wife as an actor, I met her at an audition, and I say it was a showmance that is just, it continues to this day. We've been together. This is something maybe we could talk about of going on. We're going on 13 years and we've lived this powerful, crazy, fun journey of the green rush, and she's, you know, the relationships piece is really important too, I think, with intuition and learning from your heart. The higher levels of learning and leading with your heart. That's something that I'm probably misquoting that, but I that's what I heard or felt. Can we speak a little bit to that too, when it comes to those key, for example, being married, I have a young daughter, you have daughters that are older and celebrating birthdays, but, parenting and that work-life balance too, and working in this space and working with on ourselves and our expanding roles in understanding the consciousness in our role in this life. But can we just speak briefly about marriage and family and leading with the heart? Because I think that's a lifelong, for example, I'll share a little, like when my daughter was born, you know, I was unsure of how, oh, there's so many unknowns with your first child, of course, and unknowns of you being a parent, and same, you know, you just don't, you, will she learn her personality was one thing. I had this idea of, do they read off of me and my wife, and what's she going to be like, and how, you know, and I noticed over time, even when she was in that first year, she has her, they come with their personality. There's a true innate born spark in every soul that comes, you know, born on, like for Sophia, my daughter, is just so beautiful to see that personality come out as her body was growing and as she became more, you know, developing dexterity, could hold herself up, and to see that spark in her eye and the crazy growl sounds. And now she's this little toddler. She'll be two on the 26th of January. And that personality is coming out even more because she's able to articulate, careful, mama, Papa loves Sunny, you know, our dog. You know, she's got these little three word sentences, and it's like major for us to see that development. And I don't know where I was going with this other than just to bear witness and to lead from the heart and not to be too cerebral when it comes to being a parent and being there for my wife and the family. And any advice you have, you know, that's kind of related to this theme we're exploring when it comes to relationships and family.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my father was also a CEO, and he traveled a lot when I was younger. I knew he loved us, but he wasn't around a lot. So as a father myself, that was something that I wanted to be different with my own children. And the interesting thing is I ended up being just like my father, which is I fell in love with my work. I was traveling all the time. And in many ways, I was like, how did this happen when, you know, my whole life, I promised that I wasn't going to be this way. And, you know, that was actually one of the big reasons why I took a 3-year break from cannabis when COVID started, was to just really reconnect with my family and not just be like a weekend father, but a father that was really there. And one of the things that I really learned over COVID was that, you know, what my daughters wanted from me wasn't like necessarily me to be around all the time. But when I was around, you know, that we spent really great quality time. And what I mean by this is even when I was running my company, when I wasn't traveling, I would always be home for dinner. I would always try to at least make it home to tuck them in for bed. But even though physically I was around, my mind was always on work or on what my investors wanted. And so even though I was physically around, I believe that they didn't feel like I was truly present and connected with them. And so what COVID really taught me was if I just give them like 5 minutes of full attention, you know, that typically satiates their desire to be acknowledged and loved by me. Whereas in the past, you know, I could spend 2 or 3 hours with them, but, you know, like I'm still answering text messages on my phone or emails. And because they don't feel that true connection, like they want more of that. And that's not just with my child, that's with my wife as well, is, you know, like when I give her my full attention, you know, she will feel a different type of connection, a different type of resonance and frequency from me when I'm fully present with her. And that's what I really learned from all of this, is that, you know, if we go back to frequencies and vibrations, and, you know, you being in Santa Cruz is kind of funny because when I talk to people about quantum physics, I'm like, yeah, the hippies in Santa Cruz had it right the whole time.
Yeah, you started bringing up vibrations. I'm like, of course it's all vibration.
So crazy that they were even using the right terminology. And so what I found is, you know, to deeply connect with my family is I would have to resonate at the same vibration as them, you know, get into that childlike wonderment state. And when I'm in that state with my children, you know, we just bond in a way that like it almost transcends time, you know, like when 4 hours feels like 15 minutes because you're so absorbed in that. And, you know, that's something I carry into my, or I try to carry into the relationship with my wife as well. And, you know, a lot of this is a work in progress, but I have benefited enough from this to realize, okay, hey, you know, worrying about work, thinking about all these strategies, you know, like when I'm doing that in my off time, it feels like I'm being responsible because the cannabis industry changes so much and I'm on top of all these things. But what it really did was really prevent me from tapping into my own imagination and creativity. And it just made me look at other people's frameworks and try to mimic and copy other people. And if there was a certain framework for companies and entrepreneurs to be successful, then more than 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 10 VC funded companies would be successful. And so I've actually, this is totally tangential, but I now look at business as the ultimate art form. You know, I never looked at business people as artists, but when I look at something that has the most amount of variability, and when I see the companies that I believe to be successful, one of the things that I see in common is that their leadership, you know, the leadership kind of marches to the beat of their own drum. So when you're looking at best practices for marketing, for sales, for operations, supply chain, whatever it may be, by the time those are best practices, there's already someone that's tapped into the next level of best practices that maybe goes against the grain. And to me, that is the formula for successful entrepreneurship, is trusting yourself, trusting your intuition. Now, this doesn't mean every time you trust yourself or intuition, you're going to get a positive result, because sometimes the negative results are exactly what your consciousness needs to experience to grow and expand even more. So even the negative outcomes are there happening for you in order to become a better entrepreneur. And I believe all of that starts with trusting yourself more and really seeing how your thoughts affect the reality that you manifest into your life.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah, well said. Powerful. Yeah, I think there is something to be said to provide space to let your heart process, to let the subconscious provide its contribution, and let that intuition, trust that intuition. All these key themes and concepts have been really, really resonated. I think this has been a very special show. And what are you excited about for the future? I thought it very, in some ways, I think COVID provided a break for us all. And taking a 3-year break from cannabis seems very healthy. Other things that maybe other lessons learned during that COVID period, or anything that you're kind of excited about now post that period. Obviously, COVID is still very much a reality. However, we are, as a greater human community, are a little more experienced, a little more adept, a little more callous towards it, and we can all continue to grow and move on with our lives. And so post 3-year break, what is inspiring you, and what are you looking forward to in this new chapter for Sabo?
Yeah. So many things. But, you know, I think based on our conversation today, you know, the point that I've really been trying to practice is, you know, what's exciting me right now? And if I do what's exciting me right now, the next thing in the future that will be exciting will somehow make itself present to me. And this is a grossly different way of thinking, because the previous version of myself was always planning, you know, having a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. And being very strategic that way did help me accomplish and achieve a lot of things, but it also brought me a lot of mental suffering in between the achievements. And what I've learned to do is to really trust intuition, that I will know what I need to know at the time I need to know it. And that if I continue to follow my curiosity, if I continue to follow my excitement, instead of being excited to look forward to something, I'm always excited in the present moment. And when I'm excited in the present moment and open to receiving, then I tend to get a lot of these downloads that that allow me to navigate my life. So I like to call it flowing with a knowingness, and just trusting that the breadcrumbs will always be there for me to follow. And a lot of friends that I've expressed this to have told me that, you know, that's not a way that seems comfortable for them, because it doesn't make life predictable enough. And then I ask, well, when you're trying to control things, is life predictable? And they would say no. And it's like, yeah, okay. So when we try to control things, life's still unpredictable. And when we don't try to control things, life could still be unpredictable. And so I've been more and more trying to cultivate just being present and trusting that, you know, I'm smart, I'm resourceful, and I'll know what I need to know when I need to know it. And it's been a framework that has worked really well for me, as well as for my coaching clients that are open to this type of methodology. And, you know, it goes back to that principle of everything, everywhere, all at once. And if you're always in your head worrying and advising, you know, in many ways, You may be manifesting a more worryful type of future. So what excites me about the future is being excited about the present, knowing that being excited about the present will lead me to a more exciting future.
Sabo, wonderful. I got a text from my mom, flowing with a knowingness. I love it. So I think this is by far a roaring success of a show. We actually went over. So, but all of that last bit was, we that's how it ended. So we did it. We did it. That was fantastic. Have a wonderful dinner. It's a pleasure to meet you. And hit me up anytime you're in Santa Cruz. You have my number.
Yeah. And if you're ever up in Sacramento, you hit me up too, Chris.
Likewise. I will. That's awesome. Yeah.
All right, my friend.
Take care, man. Have fun tonight. And happy birthday to your daughter.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity too, Chris. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Take care. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That went great. Flowing with the knowingness.